अथर्ववशिष्ठाश्चवनासरद्वान् अरिष्ठनेमिर्भृगुरङ्गिरश्च पुराशरोगारिसुतोत रामा उथत्य इन्द्र प्रमद्रे मभाहो
From different parts of the universe, there arrived great sages like Atri, Chayavan, Sharadvan, Arishtanemi, Bhrigu, Vashishta, Parasara, Vishwamritra, Angira, Parasuram, Uthatya, Indra Pramad, Idmavahu, Medhaditi, Devala, Adrishtasena, Bharadvaj, Gautam, Pipalada, Maitreya, Orva, Kavasha, Kumbayoni, Dvaipayana, and the great personality Narada. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chayavana, a great sage and one of the sons of Bhrigu Muni. He was born prematurely when his pregnant mother was kidnapped. Chayavan is one of the six sons of his father, Bhrigu. When Brahmaji was performing a great sacrifice on behalf of Varuna, Maharishi Bhrigu was born from the sacrificial fire. He was a great sage, and his very dear wife was Puloma. He could travel in space like Durvasa, Narada, and others, and he used to visit all the planets of the universe. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, he tried to stop the battle. Sometimes he instructed Bharadvaj Muni about astronomical evolution, and he is the author of the great Bhrigu Samhita, the great astrological calculation. He explained how air, fire, water, and earth are generated from ether. He explained how the air in the stomach works and regulates the intestines. As a great philosopher, he logically established the eternity of the living entity, Mahabharata. He was also a great anthropologist, and the theory of evolution was long ago explained by him. He was a scientific propounder of the four divisions and orders of human society, known as the Varnashram institution. He converted the Kshatriya king, Vitahavya, into a Brahmin. Vashishta, see Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.6. Parashara, he is the great grandson of Vashishta Muni and father of Vyasadeva. He is the son of Maharishi Shakti, and his mother's name was Adrishyati. He was in the womb of his mother when she was only 12 years old. And from within the womb of his mother, he learned the Vedas. His father was killed by a demon, Kalmasapada. And to avenge this, he wanted to annihilate the entire world. He was restrained, however, by his grandfather, Vashishta. He then performed a Rakshasa killing yajna, but Maharishi Pulasya restrained him. He begot Vyasadeva, being attracted by Satyavati, who was to become the wife of Maharaj Santanu. By the blessings of Parasara, Satyavati became fragrant for miles. He was present also during the time of Bhishma's death. He was spiritual master of Maharaj Janak and a great devotee of Lord Shiva. He is the author of many Vedic scriptures and sociological directions. Gaudi Sutta or Vishwamitra, a great sage of austerity and mystic power. He is famous as Gaudi Sutta because his father was Gaudi, a powerful king of the province of Kanyakubja, part of Uttar Pradesh. Although he was a Kshatriya by birth, he became a Brahmin in the very same body by the power of his spiritual achievements. He picked a quarrel with Vasishtha Muni when he was a Kshatriya king and performed a great sacrifice in cooperation with Maganga Muni, and thus was able to vanquish the sons of Vasishtha. He became a great yogi, and yet he failed to check his senses, and thus was obliged to become the father of Shakuntala, the beauty queen of world history. Once, when he was a Kshatriya king, he visited the hermitage of Vasishtha Muni, and he was given a royal reception. Vishwamitra wanted from Vasishtha a cow named Nandini, and the Muni refused to deliver it. Vishwamitra stole the cow, and thus there was a quarrel between the sage and the king. Vishwamitra was defeated by the spiritual strength of Vasishtha, and thus the king decided to become a Brahmin. Before becoming a Brahmin, he underwent severe austerity on the bank of the Kaushik. He was also one who tried to stop the Kurukshetra war. Angira. He is one of the six mental sons of Brahma and the father of Brihaspati, the great learned priest of the demigods and the heavenly planets. He was born of the semen of Brahmaji, given to a cinder of fire. Utatya and Samvarta are his sons. It is said that he is still performing austerity and chanting the holy name of the Lord at a place known as Alokananda, on the banks of the Ganga. Parasuram, see Srimad Bhagavatam 196. Utatya, one of the three sons of Maharishi Angira. He was the spiritual master of Maharaj Mandata. He married Bhadra, the daughter of Soma. Varuna kidnapped his wife Bhadra, and to retaliate the offense, the god of water, he drank all the water of the world. Medhatiti, an old sage of yore, an assembly member of the heavenly king Indradev. His son was Kanva Muni, who brought up Shakuntala in the forest. He was promoted to the heavenly planet by strictly following the principles of Vanaprastha, retired life. Devala, a great authority like Narada Muni and Vyasadev. His good name is on the list of authorities mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna acknowledged Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He met Maharaj Yudhisthira after the battle of Kurukshetra, and he was the elder brother of Dhaumya, the priest of the Pandava family. Like the Kshatriyas, he also allowed his daughter to select her own husband in the Swayamvara meeting. And at that ceremony, all the bachelor sons of the rishis were invited. According to some, he is not Asita Devala. Bharadvaj, see Srimad Bhagavatam 196. Gotam, one of the seven sages of the universe. Saradvan Gotama was one of his sons. Persons in the Gotama Gotra dynasty today are either his family descendants or in disciplic succession. The Brahmins who profess Gotama Gotra are generally family descendants, and the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas who profess Gotama Gotra are all in the line of his disciplic succession. He was the husband of the famous Ahalya, who turned into stone when Indradev, the king of heaven, molested her. Ahalya was delivered by Lord Ramchandra. Gotam was the grandfather of Kripacharya, one of the heroes of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Maitreya, the great rishi of yore, he was spiritual master of Vidura, a great religious authority. He advised Dhritarashtra to keep good relations with the Pandavas. Duryodhana disagreed and thus was cursed by him. He met Vyasadeva and had religious discourses with him. Today we are reading from Canto 1 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 19, entitled The Appearance of Shukadev Goswami, text number 10 and 9. His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, is describing the virtuous qualities of this great list of sages that came to associate with Maharaj Parikshit at the end of his life. Practically all of the great rishis, sages of the various sampradayas, all of those great acharyas and Vaishnavas, they all assembled together for this most auspicious moment. It is very interesting to understand what it was that attracted all of these illustrious personalities to come from all parts of the world and even from all parts of the universe. Throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam and the various Puranas, Itihastas, the names of these great personalities is continually appearing. These were all great spiritual masters with disciples all over the world. What a wonderful satsang this was. Can you imagine sitting a satsang where sitting in the audience is people like Narada Muni and Vyasadeva, Bhardwaj Muni, Parasara Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, Vasishtha Muni. They were all attracted to come by the sincerity of Maharaj Parikshit. King Parikshit, son of Abhimanyu, Uttara, he was the most valiant king of the planet, coronated by Maharaj Yudhisthira himself. But due to some mistake, not even considered serious, he was cursed to die in 7 days. How he responded to this fate is very instructive. Actually, as he was leaving Samik Rishi's hermitage, he realized what he had done. And rather than making excuses, he took all the blame upon himself. He committed this offense. He was at fault. Therefore, he understood that he deserved whatever reaction would come to him. Now, according to Samyak Rishi himself, and everyone except Sringi, the reaction of what he did was way beyond what he deserved. It was a slight offense that it was committed at a time when he lost control of his intelligence due to hunger and thirst. He repented as soon as he understood what he had done, yet he was cursed to die in 7 days by being bitten by a snake bird. Maharaj Parikshit, he welcomed the curse. He considered that it's very auspicious. Because I made this offense, better that I die suffering the reaction in this birth than having to carry on the fault of this offense in my future life. He also was thinking, with all the money and all the power, and all the fame, and all the relations I have in this world, how will it be possible for me to ever give them up? And we have to give up all of these attachments before we die if we want to perfect our life. So he took it as a blessing that this is Krishna's mercy. He wants me to give up all these attachments now, knowing that I'm going to die in 7 days. So he left his home, beautiful palace, his loved ones, his fame, his power, his influence, and he went to sit on the bank of the Ganges. Because the Ganges is that nectarine flow of transcendental water which is emanating from the lotus feet of Krishna. The Ganges coming from the lotus feet of Krishna, when worshiped with faith, actually connects us to the lotus feet of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he spoke that the power of the Ganges is so great that anyone who touches the breeze in the air that had already touched Ganga, anyone who sees the Ganga, smells the Ganga, anyone who drinks the water from the Ganga, touches the Ganga, what to speak of bathe in Ganga, that person in due course of time will get bhakti to Lord Krishna, will perfect his life. So Parikshit Maharaj vowed to fast till death. As he was there, all of these great personalities, they were astounded. Such a vow, such humility, such devotion. They wanted to be with him for two reasons. They wanted to get his association, and they also wanted to help him to remember Krishna at the time of death. The best friend is the person who helps us to remember Krishna. In fact, Srila Prabhupada explains, the only real friend is Krishna, because he's the only one who can deliver us at the greatest time of need. And one who brings us to Krishna is also our dearmost friend. So these great personalities wanted to give this love and friendship to Parikshit Maharaj by being there to help him remember Krishna at the time of his death. When the sages arrived, Parikshit Maharaj, in such humility, he bowed down and worshipped each and every one of them. And then with folded palms, and such a humble heart. He asked their advice, their permission, and their blessings, because he took the solemn vow to fast till death. But he didn't consider that vow to be complete or authorized without the permission and the blessings of the great souls. Srila Prabhupada explains, nothing we do is successful from a spiritual point of view unless we have the authority of the great souls. And that authority comes by receiving their heartfelt blessings and permissions. Then we can actually pursue something with the support and empowerment of Krishna. Otherwise, without the blessings of great souls, whatever we do, we're on our own. Maharaj Parikshit was so humble. He was not boasting of what a detached personality he was. Rather, he was astounded that these great Brahmins and Rishis had gathered together to be with him. He said, I'm a worldly person in the royal order. And generally, great renunciates, Brahmins and sages, they'll have nothing to do with worldly materialistic people like me. Fear of contamination. But you are also kind, so affectionate, so merciful that you have come just to help me to remember Krishna. He begged all these great sages and rishis, please, let the snake bird or whatever other mystic trick the Brahmin has sent to kill me, let him come at once. My only desire is that all of you will chant the glories of Lord Hari. Let me die in that environment. Actually, for the eternal soul, there is no death. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire. The soul cannot be slain by any means. But under the cover of the cloud of illusion, the soul is under the misconception that it is this body. And this body is subject to death. In fact, Srila Prabhupada, in one beautiful purport in Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, he explains that this body that we are all so very, very much attached to trying to enjoy, he said, all it is in truth is a dead corpse flapping for a few moments only. Hare Krishna. So much for all of these hoardings and billboards and advertisements in Bombay, where we see all these bodies trying to enjoy, trying to induce us to think that you can also enjoy. But when Prabhupada was here, he was teaching this message. Rather than having all these boys and girls or young men and young women having romantic affairs in the hoardings of Bombay, there should be this message that your body is a dead corpse flapping for a few moments only. And whether it flaps with this person or flaps with that person, or whether it flaps here or flaps there, there's not much difference. The question is, what are we doing for the needs of the soul? If we use these few moments of human life that is so rare to achieve, to hear about Krishna and to chant his glories in the assembly of great Vaishnavas, that is the ultimate perfection of life, and also the path by which we attain the ultimate perfection of life. When great souls ask for benedictions of the Lord, they essentially ask that, let me always remember you and never forget you. Let me always be in the association of your devotees, and let me always be a kind, compassionate friend of the fallen souls. These are the three benedictions that our acharyas have taught us to ask the Lord for. So these were the benedictions that Maharaj Parikshit was longing to achieve. The fact that so many personalities were giving their darshan to Maharaj Parikshit from all over the universe was their way of glorifying the example he is setting for all living beings, for all time to come. The greatest need in human society is for people who are examples of real Vaishnavas. People who, according to their occupation, their profession, or their particular ashram, is really in a spirit of humility, dedicated to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and serving the mission of the Lord. Maharaj Parikshit, although he was such a great king, he has affected the world for all time to come, more in the way he left his kingdom than in his incredible, spotless rule of the world. There was practically no adharma in his entire kingdom. When he met that personification of Kali, he punished him. He was such a king. Everyone was following religious principles. Practically everyone was on the path back home, back to Godhead. He is the last living king in our history that accomplished such a virtuous, enlightened state. But yet, we hardly remember him for that. We remember him for leaving everything behind. In a time of the most severe crisis, welcoming that crisis as the mercy of the Lord, considering I deserve worse, and using that crisis as an opportunity to perfect his life. Sometimes we all have to meet obstacles, even tribulations and heartbreaking sufferings in our life. And sometimes it is very, very difficult to understand, why do I deserve this? What have I done? Sometimes we are violently accused of things we haven't done. We don't mind when we get credit for we don't do. But we complain to God when we are being blamed for something. Srila Prabhupada explains, the nature of the world is that it's actually impossible not to make mistakes. You have to make offenses, and you have to make mistakes in this world. Even if you don't want to, you're put in situations where it just becomes inevitable. It becomes almost impossible to prevent. Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, we're put in situations that we don't want to be in. Sometimes there's two sides fighting, and you just want to be neutral, but you can't. You have to either be a friend of one, and if you become a friend of one person, you become an enemy of another. Hare Krishna. The laws of material nature is it will put you in situations that are impossible. Impossible to come out clean. by virtue of our mind, by virtue of our senses, by virtue of the modes of material nature having such strong influence on us, and the virtue of the whole environment of chaos within material existence, we're put in situations where we helplessly make mistakes. That was Maharaj Parikshit's situation. He was a lover of the Brahmins. He served them, honored them, worshipped them from his birth. But he was put in a situation where he was so overcome with hunger and thirst, he momentarily lost his intelligence. And the reaction to that was death in 7 days. It's a great lesson. But the greater lesson is how he received it. If oftentimes we get a karmic reaction, we really have no idea what we did to deserve it in this life or previous lives. So it's hard to say that I don't deserve this. But for Parikshit Maharaj, it was specifically explained why he was cursed to die in 7 days for something which was a minor mistake. Hardly an offense, just a mistake. But he didn't complain. He didn't give up his faith in Krishna. Why is this happening to me? He increased his faith in Krishna. This is your mercy. This is an opportunity. We only suffer to the degree we're attached to this temporary existence. But actually, this temporary existence is simply a facility to be a bridge for the soul to realize its eternal connection with Krishna. That's the whole purpose of this temporary world. It's not here to enjoy. Enjoyments are given, and sufferings are also given. But ultimately, old age and disease makes all enjoyments quite pale. And then death. So the actual purpose of this world is to facilitate the conditioned soul to understand the utter importance of surrendering to Krishna to actually find real happiness. So whatever and however anything comes upon us in this world, if it helps to facilitate our taking shelter of Krishna, that's our fortune. That's the fulfillment of our purpose here. Thus, these great rishis, sages, Brahmins, they assembled because they were so proud that Maharaj Parikshit was giving this example for the world to follow. They all wanted to participate in this. They all wanted their names in Srimad Bhagavatam, that they were there at this historical moment to give support, encouragement, and appreciation for Maharaj Parikshit. And 5,000 years later, we are still honoring them for just being in the right place at the right time. This was a most auspicious sacrifice. The greatest of all sacrifices is where the virtues, the glories, and the names of Krishna are being heard and chanted. Suta Goswami was present. We know the story from first canto. How the sages at Naimasharanya, they were performing a very, very great sacrifice. It is said there were 88,000 sages gathered together in Naimasharanya for this yajna. And they were performing this yajna, and from all the smoke of the yajna, their bodies were black. But they didn't really have, they weren't really getting the result. And then Suta Goswami appeared. He happened to be one of the great
devotees who was present during this katha of Shukadev Goswami on the bank of the Ganga. And because he was there, all the sages of Naimasharanya put him on a high seat and said, please tell us what you heard. And when he began to speak, they considered, this is the real yajna. This is the ultimate supreme yajna, the most purifying of all purifiers, to hear and chant the glories of Lord Krishna. Munayasuru prishtoham bhavadbir lokamangalam yat krita krishna samprasno yenat masu prasiddhati. Suta Goswami addressed the sages of Naimasharanya, your questions are most perfect, because the questions you are asking are in relationship to Lord Krishna. Therefore, the answers to this question, that subject matter is for the ultimate benefit of all humanity. Parikshit Maharaj is such an acharya. He was a grihastha, wife, children, and the type of royal responsibilities that generally ascetics do not want to come near. But here they have all gathered together to honor him, to help him. He actually became so dear to the hearts of all these personalities. This is really a very important aspect of the essence of this lesson. They came not just as a formality. They came because he was so genuinely dear to all of their hearts. Because he lived his life as a devotee. He lived in a spirit of compassion above and beyond all else. He was a selfless king. He utilized his body, his mind, his words, his whole kingdom simply as an instrument, as instruments to show compassion to others. He was a great devotee. He was humble. He was gentle. He was longing for the association of great souls. He was longing to hear and chant. Therefore, he was very dear to the hearts of all these personalities. And they all came out of affection and respect. Not only to help the king, but to purify the entire universe. Later on in this story, we find Shukadev Goswami appears. He was a 16-year-old avadut, roaming through the forest, unrecognizable by a common man, but they understood his glory. Son of Vyasadeva, who was perfectly pure in his devotion. And all these great personalities we are reading about, practically all of them are great gurus. Gurus for the demigods. Some of them, Angira Muni, not only is he a great spiritual master with so many disciples, he's directly one of the six mind-born sons of Brahma. Vasishtha Muni, previously he was guru for Lord Ramchandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are people with big, big spiritual positions. Now, generally, should I tell a story? Personal story. I have time. In 1970, I hitchhiked all the way across Europe and the Middle East, through Iran, Afghanistan, Turkey, Pakistan, and then finally I come to India, looking for spiritual people to help me understand who is God, and how to know and love God. So my first day, somehow or other, I walked across the border, and then from Firozpur, I went to Delhi, old Delhi. And the day I got there, I thought this was such a good fortune. It was the beginning of the International Conference of Yoga. It was a one-week seminar where so many famous, infamous, or unknown yogis from all over India were assembling. And they were all giving their private seminars in different rooms. It was a big, big facility they had with so many rooms. And you could select who you wanted to hear from. So many rishis from Himalayas were there. And they were all telling about their spiritual wisdom. And I was going from one to another, trying to learn, trying to understand. And I heard so many varieties that I was thinking, it's like a marketplace where there's so many bars of soap, you don't know which one to use. It's confusing. You know, that's in supermarkets in America, it's very confusing. Anything you want, there's about 50 choices. And then you get on the mental platform. But this was like shopping place of yogis and systems of yoga. One is teaching Kundalini yoga, one is teaching Shiva yoga, one is teaching so many things. So I was listening and listening, and I was a young boy, so I was just trying to be submissive and trying to get a deeper understanding of what everyone was saying. And then at the end, each one was a guru, each one trying to recruit followers. So then at the end, there was a big auditorium. And in this auditorium, all those gurus, yogis, sages, yogis, sadhus, they were all assembled on the stage in a line of chairs. It was about 30 or 40 of them. And the person who was moderating this event, he told everybody at the beginning, now all these great, the greatest spiritually enlightened persons from the Himalayas and all other different secluded parts of India have all come for this event to enlighten us for the purpose of unity and peace in the world. And this moderator was saying, in order to have unity and peace in the world, first we have to have unity and peace within ourselves. In order to have unity and peace within ourselves, we have to associate with people who have attained that stage of enlightenment. And here we have all these people who have come from everywhere, who are enlightened beings. They have come specifically to bring peace and unity in this world of turmoil and conflict. There were thousands of people in the audience. And then he said, we only have this hall for 2.5 hours. And then somebody else rented the hall. So we have to end the program then. Therefore, I request all of these great enlightened sages to speak no more than 3 minutes each. Now, sometimes we've been to Prabhupada's appearance day or disappearance day, and we know what happens when you give a great sage 3 minutes to speak. They're on different time zones or something. So the first person spoke for 10 minutes. Now there was thousands and thousands of people in this crowd. And every one of those enlightened beings, they wanted to address this crowd. However, there was only enough time for 3 minutes each. So that means when they were going down the row of chairs, so the person's at the end, anyone who goes over 3 minutes, that means this person's not going to speak at all, and this person's not going to speak. First person spoke 10 minutes. That means the three people at the end would not be able to speak. He took up their time. So the moderator, who happened to be a Western person, an American man, he brought this whole conference together. He was saying, Guruji, please stop in time. And every now and then he'd interrupt somebody and say, Guruji, please, time is up. And they would just speak louder. The next person spoke 15 minutes. The next person spoke 20 minutes. Meanwhile, the people at the end, they were so angry, they were about to start cursing each other. And finally, this poor man who was trying to coordinate it all and not make up odds, he was saying, a person went on, the fourth person went over a half hour. And this man, he was saying, every 2-3 minutes, he was saying, Guruji, you're out of time. Guruji, you're out of time. Guruji, you're out of time. And finally said, please, you have to stop. And meanwhile, all these other enlightened beings, they're really, really upset. They were angry as fire. And then one of them said, yes, we will not get to speak because you are speaking so long. And then this big, beautiful, flowing gray beard and long hair and elegant robes. He really looked like a sage from Himalayas. He had the microphone. And when he was challenged that he had to stop, he went wild in anger. He said, I am God. I am Bhagavan. I am the supreme absolute truth. When I speak, no one has a right to tell me what time limits I have. So then another jumped up and said, I am Bhagavan too. You have no right to take away my time. So it ended up, all these 30 sages started fighting over the microphone. They were actually pulling at each other's beards and everything. I was amazed. And all of us in the audience were thinking, these are the enlightened beings who we've come to associate to find peace and unity. World peace. Huh? Sarvabhauma Prabhu, the star of the Atma series, he is saying it is unity in pieces. He's laughing very nicely upon his own joke. This is very good. Ah, confirmed. So we were all just watching. And actually, when everyone was talking, there was so much talking going on in the audience. But when they were all fighting, there was pin drop silence. We were looking at each other. I was sitting next to a person I made friends with. He was a Buddhist monk from Thailand. And we were looking at each other and thinking, you know, what, is this some performance or what? Everyone was bewildered. And the fighting went on. And the poor moderator, his name was Christopher Hill, he was saying, please, please, stop this fighting, stop this fighting. And they were grabbing microphone and speaking in it. And finally, one, he was actually a very, very dramatic person. One of the great personalities on stage, he just went right into the crowd. He was like a great hero. He just went right into the crowd, took the microphone, ripped out the cord from the microphone and threw it into the crowd. But first, before he did it, he said, please understand that all these men are enlightened according to their own level of realization. Then he threw the microphone. So that's what kind of sages. Then I decided I'm just going to go to the Himalayas and just try to find out for myself what is this God. But in this assembly, we didn't have these pseudo-yogis of today. We have Vasishtha Muni, Narada Muni, Asita Devala, Vyasadev, Bhadraj Muni, Bhrigu Muni. These are really great stalwart self-realized souls. They're all gathered together. But when Sukadev Goswami came, they didn't all fight. I'm going to speak this Srimad Bhagavatam. They all unanimously gave the seat to Sukadev Goswami with honor and respect and love. And they all sat down in complete absorption to hear his words. In other words, they were all non-envious. This is quality of real satsang. Real satsang of persons is not persons who are competing, I will speak, I will not speak. Real satsang of sages and rishis are those who are simply interested in glorifying Krishna. Whether I'm glorifying by hearing or whether I'm glorifying by chanting, let the glorification of Krishna fill the whole world. Narada Vyasadeva is Sukadev Goswami's father and guru, and he's sitting at his feet in great ecstasy hearing him speak. And Narada Muni is Sukadev Goswami's param guru. He's the guru of Vyasadeva, and he's sitting there in rapt attention hearing the glories of Krishna. This is the kind of satsang Maharaj Parikshit attracted by his humility and by his grave devotion. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We should end here because I have gone over time.